Hi, welcome to what has now become the Paul Angus track. Unfortunately, Dan wasn't able to travel. He would have done a bit more of a developer-focused talk here, but I've talked in the past about this, so I was able to pick it up and still let you know about what we're doing from my own kind of way. So I've superimposed myself here over Dan. I think that's pretty seamless. You can see what's happened there. And if you were in the previous talk, you'll kind of see that I'm still here and still doing the same stuff as I was earlier. So I'll start with a bit of a background to why we're doing this backup and recovery framework, and then kind of rewind a bit back into snapshots and explain why I'm talking about snapshots, and then look at the framework, why we're calling it a framework as such, and what the framework does, and how it's going to do it, what it's going to work with, and then give a kind of real example that's coming soon. So, people who've seen mailing lists and what have you will know that any time someone's popped up talking about any kind of backup or variant of snapshots, I put my hand up and started writing stuff and tried to get people to kind of break away from snapshots as backups and have something that really would do the thing people want from a backup. And to that end, I even, more than a year ago, wrote a wiki page in CloudStack to say, these are the things I kind of think a backup and recovery solution in CloudStack would need to cater to, the kind of things I think that users will want from this kind of solution. So that's kind of partly where this came from, and also came from a customer demand. We worked with one of our customers to, again, go through that list and work out, is this what your customers would want? What do they need? What are the drivers for them? And for you as a consumer, as a user of CloudStack to sell services. So, snapshots and what they've got to do with this in the first place. Why do I get so upset about snapshots? Well, the reason snapshots are kind of coming up is because for most people, they get used as a backup because that is effectively the closest thing to a backup that CloudStack has available in it that's native to CloudStack, where you're not installing your own agents and doing your own thing. And to give some background over that, we talk about the virtual machine snapshot, a VM snapshot, and that's the more typical hypervisor snapshot that if you speak to anyone who's worked with hypervisors and say snapshot, that's what they're expecting you to mean, where you take a point-in-time image of a running or stopped virtual machine and keep that kind of probably next to or in the close vicinity to the virtual machine that's running, and you can just roll back to that simply. The exact mechanism depends on the hypervisor. CloudStack, for a long time, didn't actually have the VM snapshot piece. It really did a volume snapshot instead, where it used that point-in-time kind of image, but then copied it to secondary storage, kept it there, and people could roll back to that kind of by creating a VM from it. But they had it moved away from the primary storage, and that made them feel a lot more safe, knowing it was somewhere else. There was another storage pool somewhere looking after this. So when they looked at volume snapshots and why they're getting used as backups, you look at them, and you say, well, they have an alternate storage location, and that's your kind of first thing when you're taking a backup. You want it to go somewhere else. So if your primary storage blows up, you can get your backup. And also, you can schedule the volume snapshots like you would a backup. You can say, I want them to be run every day, or once a week, or twice a week. You can set a retention policy, which will say that your snapshot, I'm going to keep 5 of them, and when I create a new one, I'll get rid of the earliest one and keep rolling along. You can recreate a virtual machine from a snapshot image. It's a bit of a pain, and I'll show that in a second, but it is possible. And you can export the volume snapshots out of the system. So these are all things people have added because snapshots are the closest we've got to backups, and these are what people would want to do. But then we come to the what's wrong with that? That sounds all fine. Well, you kind of get a bit of a problem that you're not going to be consistent across volumes. You'll be taking a backup of one volume, then another volume, and then another volume. And everything kind of looks okay until you look a little bit closer. Oops. Until you look a little bit closer at these things and go, hang on a minute, that's not quite right. It's a bit dark on there, but does anyone else think that looks like Tim Mackey? Things get mixed up. You don't get consistency. But you might think you have, and you'll never know that it's not consistent until you try and use it again. And even when you just take a snapshot of a single volume, okay, it's going to be crash consistent, okay? But databases won't have been quiesced, transaction logs won't have been processed, all the kind of things you need to do if you've got a running application, they're not really going to happen. On a couple of the hypervisors, if you've got VMware tools or Zen tools, they're going to help you out a bit. They're going to get to some of the operating systems and try and quiesce some stuff that relate to the system, but the applications you've got on top, you've got no chance. So it's not all not safe, basically. There is the time-old thing of it's just slow. Taking these snapshots and moving them to secondary storage has always been a bit of a problem. And in the case of VMware, which a lot of people are using when they're worrying about backups, we've got to compress this image into an OVA and then move that to secondary storage, and that's taking up a load of bandwidth, also a whole load of processing power to do that. And also CloudStack says, well, I'm doing this backup now, snapshot, volume snapshot, so I'm not going to let you do anything else. You can't move this VM, you can't stop it, you can't do all sorts of things, because for safety's sake, just leave it alone while I'm doing my snapshot. And if someone's got hundreds of gigabytes or larger disks, this is going to take a long time. Then you've got, I talked about kind of restoring, and there being issues around restoring a virtual machine. So kind of natively, unless someone's done extra integrations and clever stuff with their storage, yes, I'm talking to you, Mike, you've got to take a snapshot and make a template from that snapshot. So that first step means that the data has to go from your secondary storage to via the secondary storage VM, and then back into secondary storage to be moved from one location to another. And that's a lot of data movement for really just a copy on usually the same storage. Then you've got to create a virtual machine from that template. Well, to do that, you're going from your secondary storage and streaming the data all the way down to your primary storage. You then convert that and tell the hypervisor that's a template. But then you create a new virtual machine from that template, so now you're making a duplicate of what you've already done. And if you look at that, you've probably moved the equivalent of 5 lots of that disk to create a virtual machine. So by the time it's gone backwards and forwards and then down and copied, that's a lot of operations for something that just was there before. So that's why... some of the reasons why snapshots really are far from optimal. But let's say, so we call this the backup and recovery framework. And it is deliberately named like that because it's a framework. It's not designed to do a backup and recovery for you in itself. What it's designed to do is abstract all the backup and recovery kind of operations that a user would expect. And again, that's why we worked with clients to define what users would expect and require. It's abstracting those from what the actual backup and recovery solution is doing. There are hardware ones, there are software ones, there's all sorts. So we're abstracting that away so users just have a consistent thing that happens here, and the back end of that is dealt with by a plugin to actually drive those actions. And each vendor then, of your backup solution, can have their own plugin, which basically then takes that generically named API to start a backup, and then does whatever it needs to do to make that happen, and tell CloudStack what happened, when it happened, and all the things CloudStack wants to know about it. And then I've got just a note, there is a dummy plugin as well for going through testing. So, I've kind of said, well, the framework doesn't really do very much, but to kind of reiterate what it is doing, it's creating this nice marketing-y kind of vendor-agnostic API, and there will be a UI in CloudStack for people to have backup and recovery, and then whoever is operating the cloud to be able to choose the vendor that they want to actually drive that with, that will give them the best experience as they see it. And that can be done in any way. I was thinking the SolidFire actually could pretend to be, in a lot of ways, a backup solution. It could move data around silently in the back and move things off to another location, and then we could bring things back. And it's all hidden behind just backup, and proper backup and recovery, rather than being kind of shoehorning and slightly bending CloudStack to its will. It would be natively what people expect to happen. So the cloud operator, they're getting a much greater control over how backups happen, and also sometimes when they're happening, because this is all now can be accelerated with choice of hardware, choice of software, all of that can then be chosen so that it performs as well as is physically possible. I spoke about the process to restore a virtual machine, and at the bottom of there, there was some providers say, okay, well, actually all that moving the data is really a pain, and it's still a new virtual machine based on a template of a copy of the original virtual machine. It isn't the original virtual machine. A lot of stuff will have changed in there. The hardware has actually all changed. It's just the image of the disk that's the same. And a lot of things won't like that. So they have to go and pass through various different departments. One department has to go to the storage and get the image. Another department has to take that image and put it in this other bit of storage and liaise with the customer when that's happening. And another department will be fiddling with the CloudStack database so it doesn't realize what's just happened. So if there is a full backup and recovery architecture in there, that all goes away. The user just says, recover. Or, I'll show you, recover and the volume and attach it to another virtual machine. And then I can just pull out what I want myself. So they're offering a lot more features and to users with actually doing less work, which is usually a good thing. For the cloud consumer, you've got this performance improvement, which is also good for the operator as well, but the user is spending less time going, is that thing finished yet? I really want to get on with my life. They then get this feature set that they expect. You look at the backup recovery brochure and you see all the things that it can do, and they'll be able to see, oh, look, all these things I can do now, I feel like I've got safe data. You've got that consistency of our CloudStack API, so all the things, where you are automating, you can now automate that backup and the recovery as needed. You can pull all that together. It's still a single source of truth, and it's still a single pane of glass to control stuff things through. And if you like that kind of thing, the fact that you know now, okay, I've got this big brand of backup solution that's looking after my data, I feel safer now, rather than the CloudStack guys telling me, oh, it's on our secondary storage. So isn't the secondary storage the same as your primary storage? So if one breaks, they both break? But you can say, oh, no, it's okay, because it's all handled by insert name here. So specifically, the things that the backup and recovery framework supports, the idea of policy-based backups, that's a kind of relatively new idea, or regurgitation of an old one, in fact, where you have your restore point objective. I don't want to lose more than 8 hours' work. I don't want to lose more than a week's worth of data, or whatever it is. If you kind of turn things around, rather than, as you know, everyone wants to do their backup at somewhere between 11:30 at night and 2 in the morning, and the storage suddenly goes red hot because in that time frame, everyone is trying to move snapshots of their virtual machines to secondary storage. If you turn it around and say, I don't want to lose more than 8 hours of data, it doesn't matter when that snapshot's taken anymore. Also, when that backup's taken anymore. And you can be canny as the cloud operator, say, okay, well, I'm going to do some of these at 1 in the morning, but then I'm going to do some at 2 and some at 3 and some at 4 and some at 5. And as long as the next time this guy's VM is backed up again is within 8 hours of the first time it was, they're happy. They're not going to lose more than 8 hours. But I'm not doing them all at the same time. So you can start getting kind of clever about that, and you just offer a much simplified offering to the end user, where you just say, this is a gold offering, it gets backed up, and you won't lose more than 8 hours of data. End of story. Passes your checkbook. But obviously, people still like to do scheduled backups. So we're doing that in the same way as we did them before, except we're doing them as backups. And same with ad hoc. Oh, I really just want to back that up before I start playing with that. I'll just hit my backup button, and off we go. We'll have them as first-class citizens, so that you delete the virtual machine, you haven't deleted the backups. You can go back and delete, obviously, your chain, but you've still got them, so that you've got some kind of archiving, if you like. Back the thing up and just leave it. It's been moved off to some other kind of storage, and you just kind of leave it there. Restoration in place of taking the entire virtual machine and just putting it back as it was. I mean, obviously, these are all just the kind of normal backup and recovery operations you expect, really, and that's the point. Restoration of individual volumes, and then you've got the option, you might want to just keep it, put it in secondary storage and attach it to something at some point, but you've got your copy of it. Or you might have said, oh, well, that server's blown, but there was so much data. Let's get the backup of the data, mount it in my new VM that I've created to do the same job, and then I'll just copy the data across within the VM, because that's going to be the fastest way to move data from one place to another. You can't do it any faster, pretty much. So you attach the volume, migrate the data within the actual VM itself. And then, obviously, importantly for a lot of people, is the proper integration into the CloudStack uses service to be able to, if you want, charge or show people how much space they're taking up, or how much money you want them to pay you for taking up that space. And with that, we'll record both what people call the protected data. So I have 5 1 terabyte VMs. Well, that's 5 terabytes I am protecting. But also the on data disk metrics, which says, okay, but actually I backed them up and they only got 10% on them, so that's 500 gig. And now it's doing incrementals, so I'm actually only now using up 700 gig of space for 3 months of backups or something. And say, well, we'll charge you for the 700 gig because that's the amount of space, or you charge them for the protected. It depends on the model you want to work with, but those both will be there to choose from. So now I can look at what the framework actually works with. We can probably mostly ignore the dummy plumber code. At the moment, the big one is Veeam. Their backup and replication, 9.5. Specifically, we've been working with it for VMware, but that same application works for Hyper-V as well. Although I've not tried it, most actions, because we're just telling VMware, the Veeam server what to do, the Veeam plugin is just connecting to that, they're actually going to be the same things. So we say, back that up, and it's the same. It's the restoration parts that, if we get demand for having the Hyper-V as well, it's the restoration parts, because they will be different. The disks will get restored to a different location. We'll have to be looking at SMB shares rather than whatever we would be with the VMware. So we'll have to work slightly differently on that, but that is a most of the work that is already there because we've done a load of the Veeam integration. So to give some samples of this actual work, here's our backup APIs so far. There's only a few more to come. While we're working with it, we may change some names and change some bits around. As we find that we do the next stage, we say, that previous stage doesn't quite fit in with what we called it. Let's just tweak that a little bit. But basically, the obvious things of creating virtual machine backups, creating and deleting these policies that I talked about, and then restoring volumes and restoring whole VMs. So really, the only things to be added in are the scheduled and ad hoc backups. So I'm going to kind of blend the two things here of the CloudStack side and this physical implementation that is actually there for Veeam. So we start off, we've got these policies. So we've said, right, we're going to have a policy that's created by the person running the cloud or the people running the cloud, and they're going to say, right, there is this thing, we're going to call it gold, and it's going to back up once a day. It's 24 hours, every 24 hours, at some point, it's always going to be back up. So in the Veeam world, they have what they call jobs, and we have to create a template job. That template includes stuff like it's backed up every 24 hours, includes stuff like in this zone, it's backed up onto this particular storage, which hopefully isn't a tape drive, but is some nice big fat S3 bucket or something that there's running that's highly available and all secure and replicated. So you set that up as a template, and we say, right, Veeam, tell us what jobs you have there, and it tells us the names. We say, right, that one is the one I want to link to what I'm calling my gold policy. CloudStack says okay and creates that link simply in his database. Now we've got this create VM backup, said name may change on that, and basically when we use that API, it links the virtual machine to the job. Now because of the way Veeam works, the best thing to do here is clone that job and make a new version of it, add the name of our virtual machine in, and put that virtual machine in that job. So now I've got this new job, which has all the properties of my template. It's gonna run every 24 hours, it's gonna put the data from it in this zone onto that storage, and now it has this virtual machine in it. And it's gonna just sit there doing its thing every 24 hours, just backing up. With ad hoc and scheduled backups, we'll have that job, but CloudStack will say on its schedule, as the same way as it does with snapshots, on a schedule, it'll say, right, another backup, please. Send that to the Veeam plugin. The plugin sends it to the Veeam server, and it takes that job and starts it up. And it starts it on the schedule that's already been stored in CloudStack. And then, obviously, ad hoc is what it says on the tin. Press the button, just fires the command to start that job. So we've got that kind of very simple way of now seeing that job as being how we run it, when we run it, and what it's going to do when it's run. Obviously, from CloudStack's side, that's all very well, but what was Veeam up to? What did it do? What's it been doing for the last couple of weeks, months with my backups? Well, obviously, we want to list all those jobs for the backup VM, basically what Veeam call restore points. And again, we've kind of bled slightly a Veeam thing into our API, and we'll look at that as time goes on and look at a whole load of other vendors and say, do they all call those restore points? And if they do, then restore points can stay. If most of them don't, we need to find a term that will generically work across the board and not confuse people, because Veeam have this thing of backups being jobs and actual backups running being restore points. And in fact, it doesn't have backup anywhere. So we want to make sure we have a good, consistent API and API naming that will then work for, I keep going on about Veeam, Rubrik, Commvault, whoever else wants to come along and build or have a plugin and work with CloudStack. So yeah, we can list all our restore points, we can see all our virtual machines, and we can see all the times they've been backed up. And obviously, we've also got the usage to know how much space that virtual machine backup is taking up over time. One of the things we kind of had to work around with Veeam is that when they say an in-place restore, what they really mean is in place of that virtual machine, you have the restored one, not in the same place as that old virtual machine. So it doesn't write over the top of the original virtual machine. It actually creates another one, renames it to be the same name as the original, and gets rid of your dead one, if you like, the one that you don't want anymore. Assuming it was there. If it wasn't there because it'd been destroyed and you've gone to the backup to get it back, then it still was creating it. And to kind of work with that, we've had to implement extra stuff in Cloud Stack to go find a VM that's been created and make it appear in Cloud Stack. That work we're going to then build on that kind of, because it's basically what you want to do in disaster recovery when you're bringing stuff back in a new zone. It's also what you want to do when you're onboarding customer, to be able to say, look at all those VMs, I want them in Cloud Stack. And rather than having to create templates from them and then spin up a new VM, which, as I said, isn't the same thing as the VM and moves a lot of data around, we just say, Cloud Stack, update yourself to know this VM's there. Just do it. And to do that, we need to be able to change MAC addresses and things, set MAC addresses and add NICs, but just put them into the database without creating the things in the first place. So that's also another avenue that then follows on from this work. And then the other thing when you're restoring a volume is we can attach it to an existing virtual machine. So either you span one up specifically for the job of getting the data, or as I suggested earlier, a lot of people might take a database, rebuild a SQL Server, and then basically just copy the data from the backup into their new SQL Server rather than trying to rebuild the old one and then stream it over a network back to where it came from. It's much quicker to physically mount that disk on the new virtual machine you're going to use. I think I said all that. Yeah. So one of the advantages of, again, we're doing it the way we have with these individual jobs is also the accounting and being able to see, oh, there's one job, this is the amount of space it's taking up, these are all the backups, restore points that have been created. Nearly there for everyone and me. Okay, so where is it? Because it's all kind of nice, but what's going on? So we expect to have PR appearing for pretty much all of it, with the exception of the UI, sometime soon, quarter four. We said those APIs that I showed have been done. They do exist. We've got them in our branch. All those commands where you create backups and get them back and restore, all done. It all works. We've just got to add on the scheduling, the ad hoc. Probably we think people are going to want to change the underlying policy without deleting all the backups they've taken. So they want to go from, oh, I was backing up once every 24 hours. Actually, turns out I only want to do it every week. But I don't want to lose all the backup history I had. I just want to switch the kind of policy. So I'm going to add that in. And then going and saying, actually, now I want to delete all of that stuff. I don't want that VM. I don't want to know about the VM anymore. I don't care about the backups. Just delete everything for me, please. The UI is obviously going to be very important to a lot of people. That we haven't started work on that. We expect how long and how long we think it's going to take. So probably, hopefully by the end of the year, we'll start seeing the UI come in as well. Obviously, we're trying to avoid the world's biggest bike shed over exactly what button should be where, what it should be called, and what it should look like. But we've got kind of a lot of, obviously, framework of previous what a lot of stuff looks like in Cloud Stack. So we'll just, a lot of it will just, obviously, is copy-paste. So any questions on backup and recovery? As I say, it is a real thing. It does work, and it will be coming properly in soon.
We're running Zen Server in our,
yep.
in our methods for dealing with it with third parties. It looks like it's coming together for me. Do you see anything, any possibilities for doing a similar kind of thing with Tensor?
Well, if you can find a vendor that does Zen server backup, and actually the guys from XCPNG are about, and part of their Zen Orchestrator does that, and we have talked to them at a meetup last week, I think, and said, okay, that could be interesting as a tie-up to obviously running XCPNG with their backup, and we'll drive that from CloudStack. There is an interesting company called Vincin, who I get an email from every other day, I think, at the moment, trying to sell me backup and recovery. They do seem to support quite a broad church, although I think they talk about supporting Zen rather than Zen server, and I think they use a lot of the Red Hat overt stuff. But I was talking to some guys from ENA who are doing a load of stuff with that's KVM. They do list Zen, at least, if not Zen server, in their offerings for Vincin. So I want to speak to them as well. So yeah, the idea is if anyone can write provider. And as I said, I think, Mike, a lot of the features you have for SolidFire for Zen server kind of could map to those things and give you the off-site, off storage and what have you. As I say, it kind of then gives people the button they expect to do and does the things they expect it to do. How that happens in the back end really doesn't matter. Anyone else? Oh. You have a load of choices with Veeam, the where you wanted to put it. So they have obviously there's old-fashioned tape, there's other storage, there's S3, there's. Yeah. So you just define, hey, I got a load of storage there, that's where I want it to go.
That all happens at Veeam.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So CloudStack is just going right. You asked me to do a backup, I'm telling Veeam to do a backup. So however you ran Veeam or want to run Veeam or decide to run Veeam, that's you do what you like. But yeah, it's not there's no necessity to go back into CloudStack stuff at all. It's its own thing. I guess you could use the same secondary storage array somewhere, but there's no need to unless you want to. Cool. So just to reiterate from this morning, we are hiring. So if you know people, or I won't suggest that people should leave their current employers, come work for us. But if you know people who would like to leave their current employers and want to work on stuff like this, stuff like the networking bits I worked on, talked about this morning, then great. Please get them to come talk to, as I said before, me and only me, because there's a little bonus in it. If you get people. So anyone else, just me. Honey, thank you for your time. Hope it helped.